Episode 8, Talk to Walk Ratio, podcast that's better than Paul's allergies in my stomach today.
Both low bars.
Well, hopefully we can hurdle them without any undue stress upon ourselves. We shouldn't have to try too hard today, is what we're trying to say.
Sounds good.
Cool. 1 week in, what's up to the baseball season? What's really been the big story to you so far?
A couple teams underperforming that are a little unexpected. Diamondbacks with a pretty rough start. And a couple teams that have really come out strong. I know we're going to at least touch on the Mariners today. I don't think that we are terribly surprised. Let's put it this way, it's less surprising than the Miami Marlins start.
Yes, I would agree to that. They're off to a pretty hot start.
Yeah. I would say that combined with, just some unexpected teams either really overachieving or underachieving, and a lot of pretty strong reactions to the new replay rule, I think is interesting too.
Yeah, I think that replay is clearly the top story of week one, how it's being used and implemented. Just the gaps from the ideal use of replay to how it's been implemented. I really think that there needs to be some more done to curb managers coming out of the dugout to essentially waste time until their bench coach tells them either yes or no. And I do agree that some teams have been out to a very hot start, Mariners in particular. And very surprised by the lack of performance that we've seen out of Arizona. So the Mariners play the Angels, and then the Angels are getting out to a rough start also. So that doesn't bode well for them because they're one of those teams that, could be on the bubble, come September and, dropping three at home to Seattle. That's a very tough way to start your season.
Yeah, for sure. Especially coming off a rough season last year.
Have you had a chance to watch any of the Seattle games?
I've watched a little bit. As you know, I was traveling last week. Actually, I would say to visit you guys, although it seemed like I was there for about 12 hours.
Give or take.
Yeah, but I've seen some games here and there, and I've caught replays and I've kept up on it. One thing that I thought was very interesting, the Mariners are not a topic of conversation very often around here. Just in the, I've been here almost 2 years now. And, it's pretty much Seahawks. I would even say that the Sounders, the local MLS team, is higher on the list of fan attention or just the attention that it gets in the city. So I was driving, or I was riding the shuttle after I landed on Wednesday, riding the shuttle from the airport to the off airport parking where my car was. And the Mariners game, the post game show was on the radio in the shuttle. The shuttle was packed. I actually had to stand in the shuttle. And everyone in the shuttle was talking about the Mariners.
About that. That's a very good sign for us, the city that, there's some buzz early on to the Mariners and some of their offseason moves maybe parlaying to fan interest this early in the season. Of course, baseball's a very long season. The Mariners could easily drop 20 of their next 30 and fall off the map, and everybody's talking about the Sounders season and waiting for training camp to begin for the Seahawks. But to have this early season buzz, especially, you don't generally hear a lot of buzz early in the baseball season about teams or cities' baseball teams. It's one of those sports that tends to pick up as the basketball and hockey playoffs die down. People turn to baseball to see if their team's kind of in it or not, and then they begin following at that point in time. But to hear that there's definite interest in what the Mariners are doing this early on, that's good to hear.
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely skeptical, don't get me wrong. They're not totally buying in yet, at least from the limited exposure that I've had. It's the Mariners' first 3-0 start since 1995. That's almost 20 years
That's
ago.
when Ken Griffey Jr. was still with them.
I mean, that 95 team, didn't they lose to the Yankees in the ALCS, I think?
Or was that the year they beat them in the ALDS? When was it Griffey that scored the winning run in game
Yeah.
five of the DS? Was that year?
Yeah.
For some reason,
Yeah, you're right.
95 seems to be the year that comes to my mind there.
Yeah, and that, I mean,
And I
that
think they
team
lost the
had.
Indians in the CS.
That's right. You know, that's the benchmark for this franchise, other than the 2001 season where they set the record for regular season wins. But that team had players that are still talked about more here today than the players that are actually on the team today.
So what's been the key to Seattle's early season success, in your opinion? Or what are people talking about? What were people talking about on the shuttle?
Really, it's the pitching. You know, in the notes that we had for the show that I added just before we jumped on, Cano's hitting well, and they're getting some timely hits, but starting pitching has been outstanding. Five starts, they've given up six earned runs. Felix has gone through twice, obviously, and he's pitched great both times, averaging almost 7 innings a start, 34 and a third through five starts. They have currently two pitchers on the roster who have pitched who have an ERA over 2.5.
Small sample size, but still pretty good this early on, especially if two of those pitchers are starters, are they?
No, they're both relievers. And as a staff, the entire pitching staff has given up 10 earned runs. 10 earned runs in five starts.
Well, this was always Seattle's problem in past seasons was offense. They had the pitching, even a very solid bullpen in years past, but it's been Felix, the bullpen, and essentially, not much else. I know they went out and signed Sean Figgins, who was kind of a bust, and Adrian Beltre didn't necessarily work out in Seattle. So their recent overtures in the free agent market for hitters hadn't necessarily panned out. So it will be interesting to see if Robinson Cano can bring some life to that lineup. But oh, you're saying that Cano's hitting well, but the team as a whole still scuffling to score some runs.
No, I think the offense has improved and is working pretty well right now. I think that the key still with that team will always be pitching, though, and getting enough hitting to get by. But I think that having Cano in the lineup has kind of put guys in places where they may belong a little bit more. Cano is hitting .421 so far and slugging .474 is pretty good, but Justin Smoke is leading the league in a couple, or at least he was as of a day or two ago, leading the league in a couple categories. He's got two homers early on, seven RBI. And they have a couple other guys who have knocked in four runs apiece. Ackley has six RBI. So they're actually getting some contribution across a good bit of the lineup, which is always good to see. A lot of times teams come out hot because one or two guys are hitting well. And early on, it seems like everything's kind of going their way.
And Seattle is going to need contributions from up and down that lineup all year from their role players, and every good team has that going into the postseason. Continuing to have those role players be a not necessarily major contributors to the offense, but can't. In Seattle's case this year, one of those guys can't. Two of those guys can't have a bad year. Everyone has to have an average or better than average year for the Mariners to contend this year. And over the course of time, is Justin Smoke going to revert to the Justin Smoke of the past? Or is Justin Smoke going to have a breakout year and protect Robinson Cano in that lineup?
That's a good question. And the reason I say it comes back to pitching, I mean, it often does in baseball, but in that division and in some of the ballparks in that division, you can get by with just a decent offense and good pitching. Seattle's ballpark is enormous. You've been here in the summer. You know that even in the summer, it doesn't get hot here. The ball doesn't carry. It's damp. You know, I think that if they can frequently give up two or three runs in a game, I think with a decent lineup, they can win quite a few games. But we'll see.
Yeah, the jury is definitely still out on the Mariners. Although, in the article that I sent you, they are the team that has improved their playoff chances the most. They've increased their playoff chances by sweeping the Angels on the road by 10%. So that's the biggest change in playoff expectancy of any team in the major leagues. I know you spoke about, we talked or touched on briefly about how the Diamondbacks are off to a rough start, and they've had the second worst decrease in playoff percentage chance, of course, next to the Angels, who got swept at home. And, those are games against teams in your division. Arizona got pounded by the Giants, and the Angels lost to the Mariners, both at home, when you lose series at home to division opponents, that really hurts. And here, I want to get your opinion on it, Paul. Do you think games this early in the season matter as much as games in late August and September? Or are you of the mindset that it's every game is one 162nd of the schedule and they all count the same?
Both, honestly. Obviously, mathematically, every game counts the same. How you play late in the season, to me, is more important as far as how you're positioning yourself going into the playoffs. So, sweeping a series in September against your division rival, to me, is more important than sweeping than the Mariners sweeping the Angels to start the season because of that. But in the end, you'd rather win three games anytime than lose three games anytime. And the importance to your record is the same. The importance to the psyche of the team and getting on a hot streak and on a roll. Yeah, it's more important later. But anyone who says that the games don't really matter as much early on, I mean the chart that we're talking about and that you shared tells you exactly that. Because you're going to have rough patches throughout the year. You think about it, early in the year is when you should be your healthiest. So, let's say the Mariners get off to a really good start, and then in June, Felix Hernandez misses five starts. They're much more well equipped to absorb that loss in the short term, where they tread water or they play just a little bit over 500. And then when he comes back, they're not playing as much catch up. So, long answer, but I think it matters the same regardless, but for different reasons later in the season.
Yeah, I see it somewhat both ways also. Like right now, the Pirates are finishing up a three-game set at home against the Cardinals, a team that finished ahead of them in the standings last year. And this is a big series early on as just a measuring stick to see where we are against the Cardinals. We threw Gerrit Cole at them. We threw Frank Liriano at them. We're going with Charlie Morton today. Those are three of our best pitchers against the Cardinals lineup. And so to get early season returns and kind of figure out where you stand, I think that makes games of this caliber important early on in the season. Your Phillies playing the Rangers, not as an important series, I think you would agree, than playing the Nationals this early in the season.
Absolutely.
But these are three games, three of 19 games against the Cardinals. We're only going to have six or seven more against them at home. This is where you need to create some distance between you and them early in the season. I do agree with your point, though, that a series win early in the season doesn't mean as much as a series win in late August and September, just because there's fewer games to make up the difference. So that's where I think I kind of come down on it. Each game is important in its own right for any number of reasons that you can articulate.
A baseball season is not like a basketball game where you can loaf through the first 55 minutes on both sides and then just make it all up in the last 5 minutes.
Yeah, there's finite opportunity to either make up ground or lose ground in a game that's determined by outs and a season that's determined by just the number of games that there are. Baseball has fewer teams that make the playoffs, so maybe that when you're in the National Hockey League and the National Basketball Association, some of those early season games don't mean as much because you know that you only have to meet a certain like mediocre threshold to make the playoffs, where you have to play very well for 6 months if you're going to make the baseball playoffs. You want to move on to replay?
Sure, and we don't have to talk about, but I don't know if you saw Roberto Hernandez, Fausto Carmona's first start was, let's not call it a rousing success.
Did he only give up two home runs?
Well, he went 5 1/3, so he stretched out. Only gave up 3 hits, 2 earned, 1 homer, 5 strikeouts, 1 walk, 73 pitches. That's not too bad.
Who was it against?
Cubs.
No. Watch out for Emilio Bonifacio. That guy is Babe Ruth reincarnated.
It's a good matchup yesterday with Lee and Samardzija.
I caught a live look-in of the game, and Lee was still out there pretty late into the game. He was nearing 100 pitches. I think they were cut into the top of the seventh or bottom of
No,
the
he went
seventh. Did he
seven.
go seventh? Yeah. Yeah, he was still out there. It looked cold in Chicago the other day.
Yeah, it's been cold both games. Yeah, it's been in the mid-30s with a nice stiff wind.
Yeah. Oh, good old Midwest, huh? Right by the lake.
Yeah.
Know all about that.
Yeah, we can go to replay.
Great. So the instant replay system has been implemented, and I don't want to say there's a number of controversies surrounding it, but there's certainly passionate discussion on how the replay system is being used by managers and the length of time to conduct the review and just essentially some gamesmanship that's going on with it. The rule states that a manager has to come out of the dugout immediately to challenge the play. I know Clint Hurdle in a couple of games has gone out, and I know Ron Washington did this too in the Phillies series. He did it twice in the same inning without challenging. He'd just go out to the umpire and shoot the bull with him until his bench coach or somebody who was on the line with somebody in a replay booth or had access to the replay would give him the thumbs up or thumbs down on whether it was a challengeable play or not, if the umpires got it wrong or if they got it right. And that something needs to be done to address that, in my opinion. Also, this new catcher's interference rule with the replay has also not been made explicitly clear. I remember there was Tito Francona came out again a game against the A's. I think it might have been the opener. He challenged a catcher's interference call, and yesterday the umpires took it upon themselves in the Toronto New York game to review a catcher interference play. At least three of the four managers in those two situations combined were not particularly pleased with the outcome of the replay. Whether or not the call of the umpire wasn't reversed when one of them thought it should have been, which is the Francona case, or Joe Girardi seeking an explanation between two half innings about what was going on. So some early season challenges in the replay system, and just Paul, I'm interested to know what particular scenarios have stuck out in your head as being interesting case examples, and maybe you can share some additional insights into some of the replay situations that the Phillies have got themselves into. I know that the Pirates got themselves into a number of different replay scenarios in their 16-inning victory over the Cubs on Wednesday. The system, as it was intended to be implemented, isn't being implemented in the way that it was intended, essentially, in my opinion. I'm just interested to get your take on all of that.
I have some thoughts. I have a lot of thoughts on this, but I want to start with asking you a question about what you just said. Do you think that it is not happening the way that baseball intended, or do you think it's not happening the way that most fans think it should? Because I think there's a pretty big difference.
The gamesmanship aspect of it, I don't think baseball intended it to be that way. And that's the part that kind of irritates me, because either you're going to go out and you're going to challenge immediately, or you're not. So I would rather have the manager come out and immediately challenge. Like, once the manager comes out, it's a controversial call. Like, the umpires know automatically that they're going to review the play.
So I don't disagree with you, but what's the difference between that and an umpire going out, or a manager going out to the mound and telling his pitcher, "Hey, your hat looks nice," to give him or his bullpen guy enough time to get warmed up? What's the difference? And I don't think you can tell me there is a difference. My point with asking that is that's gone unaddressed for a long time, to the point where we just consider it part of the game. Announcers say it all the time. The manager's just coming out to give the reliever four more tosses in the bullpen before he calls him out.
I mean, there's gamesmanship that goes on all the time like that. I think since the replay system is so new, those nuanced situations are more cause for consternation than something that's, so to speak, gone unaddressed and has become ingrained in part of the game. If that makes
I
sense,
agree.
yeah.
It does. But my point is, back to the question of, is this the way baseball intended it? The people who craft these rules have to know, have to be able to foresee stuff like this. Baseball is full of gamemanship, and someone has to sit there. It's much like people who work in fraud, like you and I do. You think about something and you think, how is someone going to exploit it? Baseball is all about exploiting any weakness, or sports in general, exploiting any weakness that's available. And someone has to sit there and say, okay, here's what we've come up with. How can a manager game the system?
And you would think that they would have had some sort of focus group session on that. You know, Joe Torre has been around baseball for longer than at least I've been alive. And some of those situations should have come to the fore. You would think that those sorts of situations would have been addressed early on. Whether or not baseball will take it upon themselves to not necessarily make it illegal, but like curb the extraneous gamesmanship that's happening remains to be seen. And
Oh,
I
they'll
think
do
that's what's
something.
yeah, and I think that's what's the frustrating part is baseball has historically been slow to react to this sort of
It's going to
stuff.
take 10 years to make it better. You know
Not under my commissionership, it won't.
that. But I mean, that's baseball just never gets it right the first time. And you used Joe Torre as an example. If this happened, then there's a failure. And if it didn't happen, it's a failure. But don't you think the people that came up with these rules could have gone to Joe Torre and said, here's what we've come up with. What would you do with this?
Yeah, you would think somebody would have asked those questions.
I think if they had asked you or I those questions, we would have had some of those concerns. And to me, if you can't address them and you can't put in a system that isn't without controversy a week into a season, and fairly critical controversy, not just like, oh, we don't like this or this is different, but major gaps that just appear to be flaws in the basic strategy and deployment of this new procedure. It's very frustrating to me. And that's why I get back to everyone's looking at this, but to me it's going very much like it was intended to go, or at least built to go.
You build the systems the way they are, and you'll get the results that the system will give you. Like the whole intention of the system was to get calls right, to eliminate like the big errors in umpire judgment, to not have this replay system take forever to review a play, and that it's failing on a lot of those fronts. And I think that's where a lot of the fan frustration outside myself comes from. It's like we wanted this replay system so we can get calls right, but we're limited by a number of challenges, so the manager can't go and make a challenge if he's already lost one. The calls aren't still being made right, even the really obvious ones. So I think that's where a lot of the frustration's coming in. And then, you know, these very, I mean, very, very minuscule margins for making a determination on replay. Like Jordy Mercer, did he have his cleat on the bag or not at second base? I don't know how you can tell. I don't know how you could have told in that instance. Did Starling Marte get hit? It sure would look like it to me. Even the system in itself is flawed from the technology standpoint.
I agree. And there have been a couple cases, I have not gotten to watch nearly as much baseball in the first week as I would have liked, but I've seen a couple cases, particularly in cases where like a pickoff move or throw over by a pitcher was incorrectly called in the field, challenged. And it's one of those where, as a fan, you're watching it and you're like, he was absolutely out when the umpire calls him safe, and then the replay shows that you, the fan, are correct. And then they actually get the call right on the field. It has worked a couple times, and I don't think I would dispute that replay belongs in baseball if you're committed to getting more calls right. But there are too many extraneous rules and things that just aren't making it work as smoothly as it should.
I think the whole point of limiting the number of challenges a manager had was to not unnecessarily delay the game. But when you're out of challenges, and then you go out there as a manager and you're asking for a challenges, and you're arguing about whether or not the umpire is going to give you a challenge or not, that's slowing down the game also. In some games, there's been 4 or 5 times a manager's come out and asked the umpire to review the play. You know, 3 times a pop, that's 15 minutes a game. You know, a 2-hour and 45-minute game is now 3 hours long. You know, if you're a Philly fan, the game starts at 7:05, you have already seen that Jonathan Papelbon had blown the save by 9:45. Now you gotta wait until 10 o'clock for him to do that.
That just may mean that I'm in bed by the time that he blows the save instead.
Which might be better for you anyway. So story about Wednesday's game, the 16-inning marathon with the Cubs that the Pirates played. You know, I see that they're up 2-1. It's getting late. You know, I got to be up early. And bottom of the eighth ends. I go, oh, okay. You know, I'll just turn off the game. I'll wake up tomorrow and find out that the Pirates had won by 1 run. Little did I know that they'd still play for 7 more innings to make that outcome happen. So when I woke up in the morning and I saw F with a slash and 16 next to it, I'm like, what the heck happened? So.
You know, I know you're from the area. I don't know if you're a Penguins fan, but in 2000, the Flyers and Penguins played a 5-overtime playoff game, and it was one of those where I stayed up for the first overtime, and then I committed to just staying up for the whole game. That game ended at like 3:15 in the morning.
I know that they pull out the clip every so often of like fans sleeping in the arena whenever the Penguins and the Flyers come along. Full disclosure, not a big Penguin fan, to be quite honest. I'm a marginal hockey fan. So.
So am I, but since you're not a Penguins fan, the podcast can continue.
Thank goodness. Whew. So, to wrap up replay, there's some work that needs to be done, and it'll be interesting to see how baseball adjusts to the gaps. Will it be in a timely manner, or will they let this thing go without addressing some of the major flaws? So, it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, my last thought is, and it could spark another conversation, but something that I've been thinking about is the NFL for a while was not reviewing any scoring play automatically. It would require a coach's challenge. And I know I noticed, I don't know if it was just this season or the past two that they started doing that, but it was pretty recently. And that definitely cut down on the number of challenges and makes the sport look like it's committed to getting important plays correct, without requiring a coach or a manager or someone to complain and say, hey, are you sure it's right? And I don't know what that implementation would look like in baseball or if you can do it at all, but it occurred to me as something that the NFL did to improve, I think pretty significantly improve and streamline the challenge process when I think about all the things that are happening with baseball. It's just a thought.
Yeah, you'd certainly hope that they would streamline the process a little, realize the areas where there are major gaps in how they want it to be implemented, and do something to address those. I would certainly hope that helps. As opposed to the history of the NFL, they had replay, got rid of replay, and then brought replay back again. So let me start it this way. Have you ever caught a foul ball or any ball at a baseball game, Paul?
I have not. We came close. It was probably the first baseball game that Sally and I ever went to together. And we were sitting on the third base side between third base and the left field foul pole. Lower level, maybe 30 rows off the field.
Was this at the bank?
And yes. And a foul ball came our way. And so Sally and I were maybe, she was maybe 3 seats from the aisle, and I was four. And the ball ended up landing. It hit the stairs in the aisle way. So that's how close it was. And as the ball was coming in, Sally ducked.
She did not.
Yes. And I said, if this is going to continue, you have to go after it like you mean it.
She's got to field her position.
Yep. Or get out of the way. So we actually had a ball come pretty close to us after that, and Sally made a much better effort for it. So it was only after that that I decided to buy the ring and propose.
You know, some thresholds have to be cleared before you know.
So no, I've come close, but I've never caught one. Never even like had one ricochet off my hands or anything like that.
Well, maybe one day the fates will smile upon you and or Sally, and you will have a Major League Baseball for you to own and probably hand over to your son immediately. I have had the fortune of catching a Major League Baseball foul ball
With the visual aid to
with
prove
the
it.
visual aid to prove it, right? It's got the scuff mark where Adrian Beltre hit it, and where I think it does smell like Justin Masterson a little bit. Maybe that's just the raw hide. I'm not sure. I've been lucky enough to catch a Major League Baseball foul ball. I've certainly had a number of opportunities at minor league games, but most just were either like 5 or 10 feet away from my grasp. So I've been in the area a lot. I've been in the
So let me
I've
ask
had
you
the
this.
neighborhood plays, but
Right, sure.
couldn't quite squeeze it.
So let me ask you this. When you caught the ball, did you catch it on the fly or did it ricochet off someone's hands and then come to you?
So the foul ball, we were sitting on the lower level, and so if you can imagine, I'm standing facing the field. It comes up, it goes high into the second deck. And of course, the bum who was sitting in the second deck couldn't make the play. But I
Yep,
knew that
the bum.
So I knew that if there was a ricochet based on certain geometrical and mathematical principles that I would likely have a chance. So I prepared myself. So, you know, I took a little creep step in towards the ball. So it ricocheted, and literally it was just like falling from heaven, like right towards me. Reached
And I think
up
that's very
and caught
common.
it.
The first guy, very or woman, very rarely catches the ball. It's usually, even if it's just like it bounces off someone's hand and the person standing next to that person catches it. Which is what makes catches on the fly first attempt that much more special.
And there was a catch of most fantastic proportion at PNC Park. Was it Friday night? I think it was Friday night, where a fan improvised, knew he probably couldn't make the bare hand play, and decided to catch the foul ball with a bucket of popcorn, causing quite the explosion of popcorn in the process, which
Yeah, it looked like a pretty big bucket.
was. It was a very large bucket of popcorn. And so he catches it, and he's so excited. He just starts throwing all the popcorn all over the
Yep,
place.
like confetti. It's probably wise he didn't try the bare hand because if he had stuck his mitt in that bucket of popcorn just once, it probably would have been covered in butter anyway.
It would have went all Butterfingers on him and just slid right off and. It's his buddy that's got the baseball instead of him.
Yeah. You know, a few years ago there was, I'll have to see if I can find the video. I'm sure it's on YouTube or something. It was pretty it definitely made its rounds on the internet. But at Citizens Bank Park, I was actually watching the game when this happened. A guy was carrying his daughter was maybe 3 or 4. He was carrying her in his left arm. It's kind of like holding her. And he was walking, maybe imagine like an upper level or an upper deck, split into a lower and upper level, and there's a like a walkway between. So he was walking on that, and a foul ball came up, and he saw it, and he still held on to his daughter, and he caught the ball with his other bare hand. It just like dropped right into him, and he caught it.
That's pretty impressive. I remember seeing a similar video of a dad holding a daughter or some child at an Astros game. And I think the scenario was that it was much like the scenario where I caught my foul ball, there was a ricochet, and he knew that the ball was coming right towards him, so he stands up with the child in one arm and just reaches up and makes the one-handed catch. He's like in the first couple of rows too, so I remember that. I remember that one. Do you remember the one? I think it was a Texas game, since we're talking about kids and catching foul balls and their parents. It was a Texas game where the dad caught the foul ball and then he gave it to his daughter, and then the daughter threw the ball back into the.
Yeah,
Was that a Phillies game?
that was at it. Yeah, it was.
Yeah, come to think of it, it was. And then
Yeah.
he's just like, no! And then he's just like, I'll give you a hug anyway. I thought that was pretty
Yep.
heartwarming, to be quite honest.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. And the look on his face, I think it exactly said, like, we may never catch another ball again, and you just threw it away, but it's okay.
Yeah. It was pretty cool. It was a pretty cool moment to see. I have seen men our age, maybe younger men would try this sort of thing until they're wiser and more learned like we are, where they'll try and catch the foul ball with their beer cup, which is never a good idea.
No, I mean it's the your chances are low, and also that's a very poor use of beer, in my opinion.
And you're wet. At least if you catch it with a popcorn bucket, the worst you're going to have is some butter on your sleeve afterwards. And beer at a ballpark ain't cheap.
No, though the size of that bucket of popcorn, that was probably $10.
Was a big bucket of popcorn.
It might have been cheaper to actually buy a glove to catch the ball. It was like a movie bucket of popcorn.
A double feature almost.
Yeah, seriously. He was ready for a doubleheader.
Shoot. The Pirates scored enough runs in that game for 2 days. Good times. I'm sure you'll get out to Safeco eventually. You'll have to show Luke how to catch a ball. You have to have him bring his glove to the park, have him be ready. You never know
Yep,
what could
yeah,
happen.
absolutely.
Dad's gonna get a bucket of popcorn. You bring your glove.
Maybe I can use my kid as a prop for a player jogging off the field at the end of a half inning to throw me a ball.
Kids are good for that sort of thing. My sister, with her first child, so this is my first nephew, we decided to go to the Halloween parade. And the Halloween parade's a pretty big deal where we're from. It's the largest nighttime parade in Pennsylvania. The
Wow.
Meadville Halloween parade. Yep, we wear it as a badge of honor. But we realized that as adults, no one's going to throw candy at adults. They throw candy at kids. So we had our nephew who couldn't be more than 9 months old. We held him out in front of us and we're like, candy for the baby, candy for the baby. And then we'd hold open a
Nice.
bag. So we scored a pretty sweet loot that day. So if it works for candy at Halloween parades, I got to imagine it works at a baseball game also.
Absolutely. We might as well reap as many benefits as we can from this kid starting immediately.
A Major League Baseball is certainly worth all the time and effort that you're going to put in.
I mean, he was born too late for a 2013 tax break.
Come on.
So, but yeah, it'll be fun to take him to a game for sure.
Yeah.
We've already watched some baseball together.
I heard he caught the home opener, or the not the I don't think they played at home, but I heard he caught the opener. You sent the
Sure did.
pictures.
Yep, wearing his baseball socks, Phillies onesie.
Thuggin' hat.
Yep. Yeah, he's got. I mean, it's. If you've seen the pictures, his nursery is a full baseball theme.
No pressure to be a baseball player at all, Luke.
No, though I do have some bad news. He does appear to be right-handed from all early indications, which is a real disappointment.
Well, you can still hit switch, right?
He could,
I mean, it's easier to
yep.
hit switch than it is to throw both.
I recommended when we swaddle him to only swaddle his right arm in and keep his left arm out so that he would be forced to become at least ambidextrous.
Now, see, my brother had his baby maybe a week or two after you had Luke. My brother is a basketball fan. He's just like already getting him like ready to jumping and in the motion. I'm like, you know what, with my child, I'm gonna get him I'm gonna go through the wind up with him. When he's 2 months old, he's old enough to go do the motions and have me, move his left arm.
Yep.
I might have to think about it. I'm like, okay, right foot back, turn with the left, because it goes against everything
Right.
that I know. So just
Yep.
do the opposite. I'm like, okay, and then throw. So, may I suggest that you try something similar and let me know how it works out?
I certainly will. Yeah, I'll do that. He'll be 2 months on Thursday, this coming Thursday, which is amazing. And believe it or not, a week from today is my 1 year wedding anniversary already too.
Where's the time go?
Seriously.
Do you have a trivia question for me this week?
I sure do.
Awesome. So I'm 4 for 5, going on 5 for 6.
That is correct. You're batting a cool 800.
It's Seattle Mariners lineup-esque.
Yep. This is a Babe Ruth question.
You would ask a Babe Ruth question.
This takes all the guesswork for you about whether it's about Babe Ruth or not. Are you ready?
Hit me.
Against what opposing team did Babe Ruth hit his first career home run? And I can give you multiple choice if you want.
I will say. So he's probably with Boston at the time, and I still think Boston and New York probably played each other a lot. Or did he convert to. Was he a hitter with Boston, or was he just straight up a pitcher? Anyway, they would have played the same opponents. For some reason, I think Cleveland is the answer. So that's what I'm going to go with. Cleveland. I'm probably wrong.
Incorrect. It's the obvious answer. It's the New York Yankees.
Should have been. Should have asked for the multiple. Was Cleveland on the multiple choice? Yeah, it would
The multiple
be.
choice options were the Yankees, the Red Sox, the Chicago Cubs, or the Baltimore Black Sox.
I didn't know Baltimore had a club called the Black Sox.
Me neither. And that home run, May 6th, 1915. Next month will be 99 years since that home run.
Wow.
So you fall to 4-2.
Yeah, I mean, I should have known a Babe Ruth question was coming up, and studied a little harder. I should have accepted the multiple choice because I clearly had no idea. I really had no idea. But even if you put the Yankees in there, I'd have been like, you're doing it just to try and fool me.
Yep.
So he hit it with the Red Sox against the Yankees then, huh?
Yes.
This
And
was the
yes,
days
he.
before the DH.
Yes, and he was a pitcher almost exclusively, but hit the vast majority of his home runs and really did not hit that much as a Red Sox.
There's a story about the umpires. About them being biased and racist. I don't think I really want to talk about that.
No.
I just
I
thought it was
read through
more
that.
kind of like shock story than anything else.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting, but I just think that umpires do a poor job indiscriminately.
I don't find it hard to believe that they exhibit bias on, say, like the rookie veteran scale of things. Like, if you're Clayton Kershaw and you're going out and you're near the plate, you're going to get that called a strike, going up against a rookie.
And so would CC Sabathia.
Sure. But to say that umpires who, by the way, are not all white, and by the way, don't all come from the United States, our boy CB Buckner comes from Jamaica.
And he's
Yeah,
terrible.
and Angel Hernandez is terrible.
Stinks.
And I'm sure there's a white umpire out there that stinks also that we can't think of. Dan Iosonia, perhaps. It just maybe with his strike zone. They stink all the same. Our tagline was, at the very beginning, we're going to be a podcast that projects to be better than Angel Hernandez's strike zone. Well, Angel Hernandez's strike zone is the worst for a reason. It's not because he's discriminating against somebody. I found the whole piece to be sensationalists and just starting controversy where there may not particularly be one.
Which unfortunately frequently happens with charges of racism.
So is there anything else? I know this is kind of a short one, but is there anything else you want to discuss? Any last impressions on the first week of the season? Any player that's particularly surprised you besides Emil Bonifacio?
Not particularly. I'll make my one closing comment about the Phillies and just my observations early on. It looks like Utley is off to a really strong start, which is good to see. He's played well in the Cubs series for sure, but he usually does play well in Chicago. Already, Sandberg has used every single player on the 25-man roster. He has not been afraid to change the lineups. I think he's had a different lineup every day. Ruiz has been a great hitter and so far this year, and he had no problem just sitting him, and it wasn't a day game after a night game. He's let Ryan Howard stay in there against some left-handed pitching, and Howard's actually done okay so far.
Yeah, Ryan
But
Howard's been surprisingly his old self early on.
I also have some confidence that if he does struggle against lefties, I can see Sandberg sitting him every once in a while. Not a platoon, but he's not going to be like Charlie Manuel, who just he put him out there every single day just because he was Ryan Howard. He's already hit him in the five hole. That was the first time he had hit in the five hole since like 2008. Or, sorry, out of the cleanup spot since 2008. It's still early. Their bullpen has already blown two leads. I'm not surprised by that at all. I'm more surprised by the encouraging signs I've seen from the offense. They're hitting over 300 with runners in scoring position. They played a Rangers team that they could have swept. And they also, frankly, blew a 6-run lead in the first game, too, that they won regardless.
Yeah,
And they're beating up on the
and a
Cubs.
Rangers team that didn't start Yu Darvish on opening day.
Yeah, I mean that. I didn't even know the name of the guy who started game one for the Rangers, but he did not appear to be ready for showtime.
Who was this?
The guy who started game one for the Rangers. It was his first major league start.
Gotcha. Yeah, it's hard to make your first opening day start and your first start on the same day.
Yeah, no kidding. So, just good initial early impressions, positive, but like we say, anytime it's April 6th and you're talking about baseball, it's very early.
Yeah, a lot of baseball to be played, a lot of things to be sorted out. It's good that Sandberg is playing a lot of his players, so when the Phillies sell off all their pieces in July, then he'll know who to play in August and September.
Or when a lot of those guys in the mid to late 30s start to break down and go on DL in July.
I think that.
One last piece I'll tell you too. Marlon Byrd has been sensational in right field. He really has been. He's made some great plays.
I'm glad for you.
This coming from a team that started nine different players in right field last year. Nine. And they were all worse than Marlon Byrd.
I believe that. I think we threw nine bodies out there also. Somewhere close to it, at least. So I'm glad he's providing some stability out there. I mean, he's a decent player. Contract's terrible. But would I rather have him than not? Probably. Just not that price tag. Yeah, the Pirates are, off to a decent start too. They tend to play better at home on the road. It'll be interesting to see if they can take the series from the Cardinals today. When you start the season out against the Cubs, you should be winning that series. But they've had a heck of a time against Jeff Samardzija, and that continues. And the offense has been slow to come along, even though they did score 12 runs on Friday night. This is just typical early season Pittsburgh. This happens every year. The offense gets off to a slow start. No one pitches to McCutchen. I don't know if he's leading the league in walks right now, but I'd be surprised if he wasn't in the top 10. But I mean, been checking in on some of the other teams, the other games, and it's just good to have baseball back and games that mean something, and especially early in the season when there can be a day game on a Tuesday. And you could just be like, ah, I think I'll just listen to the two teams that I never would ever listen to, but they're playing right now.
Imagine being on the West Coast and being able to listen to baseball at 10 or 11 in the morning.
It's pretty fantastic, I'd imagine. So we were on our honeymoon in Hawaii, and they're playing a 7 o'clock game at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Good to have baseball back. Good to have actual games to talk about. Good to see some teams overachieve and some teams that have underachieved need to kind of kick it into high gear, lest they fall further behind. All in all, I think it's been a good first week. Good first week of the season, in spite of some of the replay challenges that we've chronicled.
And let's face it, I think everyone knew that it was not going to be a smooth implementation.
Not to bag on C-League any more than we already have, but was it last year they implemented the wild card? Or was it 2 years ago?
Two.
So, 2 years ago, they didn't even know when they're going to play the wild card game. And they were already into the season. Like, I mean, it's one thing to get the framework in place and to have it function, but function poorly, just for the sake of having it out there. But something this important needs to have been thought through and implemented a little bit better than it has been. Yeah. That's my final
Well,
word on that, I suppose.
they'll think it through over the next 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, I would expect by the time my 10 years over, we'll have it figured out.
I look forward to it.
Cool. Anything else, Paul, before we say goodbye?
I don't think so. I can hear my son screaming his head off in the other room. I don't know if you can hear, but Luke is screaming his head off in the other room.
It's time to go then.
But no, that's all I have. We'll keep an eye on some of the teams that we've talked about. I'm definitely, I'll definitely keep chiming in on how things are going with the Mariners from a local perspective. Should be interesting.
Yeah, and I know we had intended to do a podcast prior to this one with our projections. We had filled out a spreadsheet. We
Yes.
should we'll have to hang on to that spreadsheet, and maybe we'll revisit that like halfway through the season and see where we are.
I think that sounds good. But we did fill it out before the season
Yes,
started, so
we did.
no shenanigans.
Yes, we did. So we'll see where we're at halfway through, where everybody is. Cool. Well, I think that does it for episode 8, Paul.
Sounds good.
All right, we'll see you in episode 9. Take care.
See ya.